Tadam in Montreal is pleased to present Artists Against Apartheid 13, Thursday, July 22nd, 8 p.m. at the Sala Rosa. Please join us for the public launch of the Montreal Artist Declaration, uniting 500 Montreal artists around the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, with performances from Amerythme, the Community Vibe Collective, and Algonquin hip-hop artist Samian, with guest appearances from members of Nomadic Massive. That's Thursday, July 22nd, 8 p.m. at Sala Rosa, 4848 Saint-Laurent. Tickets are $5 to $10. For more information, check out tadamon.ca, a CKUT co-presentation.
Yo, check this out. This is Flavor Flav, and you listening to C. Yo, check 1-2. This is Flavor Flav, Public Enemy. And you listening to K. Yo, check 1-2. This is Flavor Flav, Public Enemy. And you listening to CKUT, and the place to be, from the Bronx to T.O.P.
I saw Made in L.A. movie at the Immigrant Workers Center last winter on the El Salvadoran women standing up to the clothing chain Forever 21 in Los Angeles. And today we're going to bring you news in a similar vein, which is a feature that's been prepared for us, or being prepared for us, by David Koch, who happens to be doing the teching for today's show as well.
Hey. So I want to add first, though, that also collaborating on this report were Mustafa Hanawi and Neil Rockwell of the Immigrant Workers Center, the IWC, which advocates for the rights and the decent working conditions of immigrant workers here in Montreal.
Right, and down there in Côte des Neiges.
That's right. And I'll give the contact info for the IWC if anyone wants to get involved as a volunteer, or if they're looking for some support in their workplace or in their struggle to get to get citizenship, for example, struggles against deportation. IWC has been involved in these. So they're at 4755 Van Horn, office 110. And their phone number is 514-342-2111. I'll repeat that at the end of the feature here. Also, their email address, if you want to give them a shout by email, info@iwc-cti.ca.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So check that out, the Immigrant Workers Center. We were working on that campaign that you mentioned, David, for the movie that you saw, Made in L.A., was part of a campaign for garment workers in the province of Quebec. Because in recent years, Quebec's textile industry has downsized dramatically, throwing workers and their families into tough situations as they struggle to make ends meet. Between 2002 and 2005, textile and clothing industries shed almost 25% of their workforces, which means unemployment for thousands. Whose lives are being impacted by these shifts in our economy? Well, most textile workers are women and characterized as aging by Quebec statistics. And many are also newly landed immigrants, and that's a group that already endures high rates of poverty. So even as companies have remained profitable, these garment textile companies, bosses have abandoned these workers in order to move operations to countries where labor rights are weak or non-existent practically. Laid off textile workers in this province sometimes work for the same company for a large part of their adult lives, you know, 15, 20 years working for the same company. But do they get job security in exchange for those years of service? Well, No, in many cases, and not according to Bob, a garment worker who for the past two decades has been working for the same Montreal company where he pleats pants. Now, Bob is not his real name. In order to protect his identity, the names of workers interviewed in this report have been changed. We met Bob, who's an immigrant originally from Sri Lanka, as he was leaving the factory where he works at the end of the day. Let's hear an excerpt from our interview with him.
How long have you been working in the needle trade?
It's more than 19 years.
And here in Montreal in particular?
Yeah, in Montreal. The same area.
Before you did Pleading, did you work for any of the bigger companies or always?
Since I came to Canada, I started this the first job. It's 20 years. It's I'm still hanging on the same business.
I guess you've seen a lot of people get laid off, you know, in your 19 years here. I mean, was there a time when that was happening the most that you remember?
The mostly start from 1995. That's the one. Start, and then from that it's always, you know, the people work like 2 months or 3 months. And, you know, before that it's always they work like the whole year round. And even with that time I'm talking about 1990 or before that, the companies run 24 hours, three shifts.
Wow.
But now it's even two employees or two or three, you know. Even they work maybe once a month or once a week, you know.
Really?
From 1990, you know, it was more than 13 pleading companies was in Montreal. But right now it's two. It's hanging.
Yeah.
And even the Cross Canada is only the two pleading companies so far. It's just we are hanging. And we don't know that how long it's going to keep, but, you know.
So we're talking about a massive downsizing in the industry, in the garment industry in Montreal and across Quebec. I mean, within 20 years, we've seen, according to Bob, this massive, massive change. You know, three shifts per day, shifts 8 hours each. This massive building just humming with industry, and now it's hardly anything. Hardly anything left of it. Now, before living in Montreal, Bob said he studied computer science in Germany, but originally he's an immigrant from Sri Lanka. He said that in order to get work in information technology here, he'd have to go back to school, but with a family to support, he can't afford it, so he's stuck pleating pants. He's got one child.
Because I cannot afford to have more kids because I have to, but, you know, that's another thing, you know. You have to check your expenses, you know, per month for the house, car, and for the food, you know. It's very hard to make those payments, you know, the bill payments especially. So I thought I'm going to have a good future in Canada. That's why I moved to Canada. But when I get here, I have to sponsor my family. I have to work like a dog, you know, to show the income that to the government so I can get the families here. And so that's what I started in this trade. I'm stuck with that because I cannot go to the other one. Then I have to go back to the school to study. And that's I'm going to waste the time and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to lose money. Yeah. So that's why I'm stuck on this trade.
So you're trained in computer science.
Yes. When I came here, but, you know, the first step that I have to have a place to live. There's no one to support. So I have to work. So I have to find the job first. So I find the job this. Then, you know, after I'm trying to create myself, you know, for the future, there's no time. There's, you know, not enough money involved. So I have to pay for the school. So
you got to pay for school. You got to pay the rent.
Yeah.
And everything.
Yeah. So this has the one has changed me to stay on this same trade.
So working like a dog, he said he's been working like a dog. That's how he described his life working here. After trying to, you know, come to Canada and find decent work here, I thought you could find a better life after gaining education in computer science.
Some of that probably has to do with the salary, with the wage he makes.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, it sounds like the wages are quite low. They started at minimum wage there. Goes up with experience, but he said, but there are some who get paid by the piece. We're going to hear a bit about that later. First, I just want to sort of describe the place. It's a pretty plain-looking complex where Bob works. It's large. It takes up an entire city block by the railroad, and from there you can see an enormous banner draped on the side of the multi-story building that reads alloué for rent, because whole sections of the building are vacant, about 80% in total. The shop floors are silent. The walls are decaying in many places. Hard to imagine that only 20 years ago, these rooms just hummed with the sound of industry 24 hours a day, hundreds of workers being employed. And Bob said that mass layoffs in the Montreal garment industry coincided with the implementation of free trade policies in the mid-1990s. And while the government has implemented these laissez-faire policies, allowing companies to move their manufacturing operations overseas, it seems it hasn't provided support to the workers left unemployed by the garment industry as it decays in places like Montreal. So let's hear a bit about that.
I came to this country, and that time they didn't have any trade with the Sri Lanka or China or another countries, or India or Bangladesh. This is just a start after 1995, the free trade.
So what do you think is going to happen to the economy in general? What do you think the trend is that we're facing?
You know, it's going to be bad. I mean, whoever in this trade, it's going to be bad for them.
Do you feel like the government is actually doing anything or the...
Nothing.
And it's, I mean, one thing that happened in other factories, is it because what you've seen, is it because there's no demand or there's no orders, or is it because they're actually just moving the companies to other places?
To other places. They're moving to another country. Mm. You know, it's all importing. So that's where the business is going down, and there's no demand for the local productions.
Do many of the people that you know who've been, or like people that you know that if you know people who have been laid off, do you know they've been able to actually find other work, or has it been difficult? Or
it's very difficult. It's very difficult because when they get trained for this job and after they're gonna go to another job, it's completely different. I mean, if they're gonna go for the different field. So I don't know how they're going to adjust that, but they have to understand to make their job to do right.
You mentioned piecework. Somebody mentioned piecework before. The pressers, I think, they get paid by piecework, right? Yes.
That was the voice of a man who we'll just call Joe. He's the maintenance worker who takes care of the building where Bob's factory is located. And when he learned about our project interviewing garment workers, Joe introduced us to people heading home at the end of their shifts. He's worked at the same building for about 10 years and seemed to know a lot of the workers passing through the lobby doors as they quit work for the day. Unlike Bob, Joe, the maintenance worker, is not an immigrant. He's also the member of a union of maintenance workers, which he says provides him with some job security. Here he's talking about workers who steam items of clothing, workers who apparently don't earn a wage, but get paid rather on the number of pieces that they press. Let's hear about that.
And I think now it's just a couple of cents, isn't it, a piece? And I've heard 1 cent for the pressers, so they got to be fast. You know, how many pieces can you get down there in one day? Some of these people, there's two pressers in the building, and these guys work extremely long hours, and they work Saturdays and Sundays. So, but that's because they're asking for such little to do their work. To compensate, they have to work longer hours.
So, like you were saying there, David, it sounds like the wages are quite low, and especially in the case of these steamers who get paid apparently about a cent per piece that they steam, which I guess is why the clothes look so nice when they come out of the box in the stores and get put on the hangers and on the shelves.
It's also why they don't cost too much in our stores. I mean, it's ridiculous how cheap clothing has mm-hmm. become compared to what it is.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it makes you wonder. I mean, we all wear clothes, and you know, How much value do we actually put on the people who make it, who are struggling working as pressers, for example? And Joe, the maintenance worker who we talked to, said that some of the steamers, some of the workers that he knows work under the table to supplement their small incomes, with welfare. And he said, you know, as a taxpayer, he doesn't really approve of people taking, you know, collecting welfare while they're working. But he said he'd never turn them in, you know, because it's their livelihood that's at stake. Here's Joe again.
A lot of these people, they live in the same house. You get, you know, like 10, 15 people in the same house, so they all share the rent and the cost of everything. So it really reduces their expenses. So that's how they manage to get by.
It's just a little slice of life from what sounds like a pretty difficult situation indeed. And with the garment production industry continuing to disintegrate in Canada, Joe said that his bosses, who are the owners of the property that he maintains, are trying to market the building as office space or condominiums instead of factory space. They've even converted a former shop floor into a pretty sterile-looking office showroom that we saw. So will manufacturing continue to erode in Montreal and across Canada and be replaced by the so-called information economy? This could, of course, mean that people like Bob, after 20 years of work as a pleader, would have to find new careers to sustain their families. At the factory, the massive boilers that once fueled constant production have been shut down. So this might be a sign of the times, or a sign of what is to come.
Yeah. We have two steam boilers here that we used to use just for the manufacturers to provide steam for their presses and their irons. Mm-hmm. And that was the big draw to this building. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to come here because of our steam boilers. Mm-hmm. But now we close them down. It wasn't paying for us anymore. Mm-hmm. We're losing about $20,000 a month in gas.
Wow.
So, because the steam was carried throughout every floor, and it was only getting distributed to very few on a few floors, so it was too costly. Mm-hmm. It was a shame to shut them down. It was kind of the end of an era.
The end of an era. So it's the end of an era when people who make clothes could get jobs in Montreal is what it sounds like. You know, before we left, Joe said that he still buys clothes at Walmart that are, you know, made in China or what have you. He never used to mind paying a little more for products that were made in Canada. But he said, well, it seems like people don't get too patriotic about that label, made in Canada, anymore. But when I was leaving the factory, I was struck by the sense that in order to support these garment workers in Montreal, of course, many of whom are immigrants, it's not really patriotism that's needed. Patriotism so often being tainted with racial hatred and fear, I think rather it's a struggle to go beyond borders of nations and to try to make sure that workers' rights are respected everywhere, you know? And you know, with corporations moving to these despotic regimes, they reward dictators who meet organized labor with police batons and terror deployed by the state. And if this is what it means for companies to be competitive in the global market today, I think the impacts have basically trickled down like toxins into fresh water. And this is what we're finding as workers struggle over these machines, sewing machines and steamers, from Montreal to Beijing. It seems like we need to find a new way to organize, because people need clothes. And the people who make those clothes deserve decent jobs. So that's it. What's our next segment?
Well, no, I just want to comment on something because this is a fascinating angle for me, and I've learned so much from what you've just told us about these people who are making the clothes. Because my own boyfriend is a tailor, can't find work, can't find anybody who's a client. It's very difficult, and I mean, he does excellent work, I have to really say. I'm biased a bit, but yeah, he's an artist, and it's like $10-$12 an hour is all he can make for it. And it's a direct it's interesting to see how directly impacted we are by globalization. This is a real example of that. Montreal, garment center of the world, along with New York, of North America, and as you've reported, we've just lost it. in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And to hear these workers from Sri Lanka who recognized 1995, a free trade agreement, and the impact it has. This was voted in, by the way, with the support of Quebec, the PQ government, and it was supposed to be the way to prosperity for all of us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got sucked in once more.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like a race to the bottom, you know. And I think that it's this competition that you were talking about earlier. You know, society economy based on competition, instead of a society based on solidarity. And I think that's what we need to be striving for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.